Morning, Ogeta. Thank you, Lokam. This pillow morning, me pillow mamas, Lokam, na boong, one time you pillow, na give him big name long, big pillow, one time you pillow. Thank you, true, long Ogeta, who said he come, na me like talk welcome, long Ogeta. Awesome, na Ogeta up in hand, na bite him hand, 1, 2, 3. Oh, me had him one pillow tassel. Oh, you mean must try him another pillow time. All right, Ogeta up in hand, na bite him hand, 1, 2, 3. And now, thank you, true.
She basically said, welcome. Thank you. It is very good to be with you guys again. It's been a long time. It's been a couple years since we were here at Mifflinburg Nazarene. We have a very close connection with this church, especially with Shane. For all the kids out there with their little quizzes, Shane was my roommate in college, and we were both in each other's weddings. He is a good friend of mine, even though he's shaking his head no. I know he really loves me. So we are really excited to share with you about what's happening in Papua New Guinea. There's so many exciting things God is doing, I know, in this community and all around the world. And this is just a little snippet of what God is doing at Kujip Nazarene Hospital. This is our family. I'm Matt. I'm an emergency medicine doctor that works at the hospital. It's Tammy. She's a teacher. And then we have two kids, Alana and MJ, who aren't here because we're traveling a lot this weekend. But Alana's 7 and MJ is 5. And they do miss you guys. I'm sorry.
Just a little bit of background information about Papua New Guinea before we start. This is their flag. Papua New Guinea is located just north of Australia. It's actually half of an island and then some surrounding islands on the right side there. On the left side is actually part of Indonesia. You might have heard of it. It's where there's a lot of unrest going on. The Indonesians are taking over. So anyway, we live in Papua New Guinea, and we are only an hour flight away from Australia. But we live in a place that feels like you step back 50 years in time. It's pretty crazy to know that we're that close to civilization yet living in the bush. Our country, like Pastor Krell said, our country has over 850 languages. We have the most languages of any country in the world. The reasoning for that is due to how rugged it is, and all the tribes are separated, and they've all made their own language. Thankfully, we only had to learn one of those, which is a trade language used to speak between the tribes, which is Pidgin, what we've been speaking so far this morning. We all know that every country has issues, right? If you guys think America doesn't have issues, you can come talk to me afterwards, because when we came back, I was like, whoa, America's got issues. But Papua New Guinea has some issues, too. Some of their biggest issues that they're facing is violence against women, which is pretty much all over, universal, all over the country. And they're facing a lot of fighting between tribes. So a lot of, like, machete chops and things like that. So Matt's pretty busy at the hospital. And Kujip Nazarene Hospital is located right in the center of that tan part on the map. Matt's got his little laser there. Good job. That's where Kujip is located, in the middle of all these mountains. And so we're really there to bring physical and spiritual healing to the people in Papua New Guinea.
Our first 2 years were with an organization called Samaritan's Purse to help doctors get started on the mission field. But as of February 1st, we are officially Nazarene missionaries, which is really exciting. And just a little disclaimer and a little education, there are two categories of missionaries within the Church of the Nazarene. There are global missionaries, which are mainly sponsored by the church, and sponsored missionaries, which raise all their own support. Most new missionaries, like us, are sponsored missionaries. This is just saying that we do need support to help get to the field. But like all missionaries, we not only need financial support, we need a lot of those intangible things, which this church is so good at. Sent us a box of school supplies for children's church. You're mailing us some hospital supplies. We get cards from this church. And I know there's so many people in this church to pray for us. And that is far more important than the finances. But if you want to give us money, that helps too.
All right. Well, we are sorry to disappoint you. This is a really strange way to start a sermon. We're sorry to disappoint you, but we're here today to tell you about our failures and how much we failed on the mission field. But it's not your classic sermon. So our title is, We Failed, But God Never Fails. So even though we may have not done what we thought was our best, God still works, and he's still at work through us and what's happening in Papua New Guinea. So back when I was in college, this thing, Pinterest, came out. I don't know, do you guys still use Pinterest? I'm really disconnected from American society now. But anyway, I think it's still out there. But you would look up, you know, what this great craft idea or food item that you wanted to do, and then it would look so amazing on Pinterest, and then you'd try to recreate this beaver cupcake at home, and it would give your children nightmares, right? Okay. So, big fail, right? Big fail. Well, failures are a big part of all of our lives, whether we like to admit it or not. And failure is actually a large part of cross-cultural living. You are continually failing and learning and trying again. And that's kind of what we're here to talk about today. Some of our failures that we're going to share are funny. Please feel free to laugh at them. We like laughing at ourselves. We like laughing in general. Feel free to laugh at those. Some of them are a little bit painful. Please don't laugh at those ones. You won't want to anyway. You'll feel bad. We didn't come today to share our failures, to get your pity, or any of these things, but we really just wanted to come and be real about what the mission field is like and what our experience has been over the past 2 years, as well as share some stories about some of the nationals and the interactions we've had, and maybe challenge you to take a chance at failing as well. All right. So here's a failure. Matt decided, we'd been there for 2 months, he decided that it was time for a date, so he lined up a babysitter, he got us a car, and we were going to drive off into the bush by ourselves and have a date. We were going to go hiking, and it was going to be great. Well, we drove for maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes, and then we came to this bush bridge, which is made out of downed trees, literally logs that they put across the bridge to create a bridge. And as we're driving across, I hear this big crack, and then a crunch, and then I look out the window and realize that the tire is no longer touching the ground. Our car was pivoted on top of the bridge. A piece of the bridge broke and went up into the car. And so, needless to say, we stood there in the equatorial sun for 5 hours while the Nationals rebuilt the bridge under our car. So that was a big date fail.
Well, thank you for sharing that story of my failure. I get to share about yours now. This picture is a picture of Tammy failing at being a butcher. We get some weird gifts sometimes, and one family was very appreciative for what I've done for her mother, who had a stroke, and they gave us a huge plastic bag filled with warm chunks of dripping, bloody pig meat. And this is Tammy trying to sort through it all and getting blood all over the kitchen. And she does cook some very good food, but that pig didn't really taste that great. Sorry.
Like I've said before, you can start cooking for yourself all the time, and that will be fine with me.
Oh, I take it back.
All right. Speaking of food, we decided that we were going to plant our own garden, and we would be like self-sustaining and eat our own vegetables and things. Well, these are how our carrots turned out. They're pretty sad. Very, very sad, actually. And ironically enough, we thought we were growing cilantro the whole time.
Well, Ranger, our cuscus, enjoyed the carrots, yes. At least. Okay, so today we are going to talk from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 23. It says, "Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. 'It's a ghost,' they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, 'Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid.' 'Lord, if it's you,' Peter replied, 'tell me to come to you on the water.' 'Come,' he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, 'Lord, save me.' Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. 'You of little faith,' he said, 'why did you doubt?' And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly you are the Son of God.'"
So I have a classic missionary example of failure. We had been there for, I don't know, a few months. We had a few months of pidgin language training under our belt, and we felt like, all right, we can handle speaking at a bush church now. Let's do it. And throughout that time that we were learning about the culture, we learned that the Nationals really loved incorporating drama into their Sunday mornings. And so we thought, okay, well, we're not super good at drama, but we can try to do that and put it into our sermons, and then it'll be a great way for us to cross this cultural barrier and connect our cultures. So on this particular Sunday, Alana and I were doing a drama about keeping your eyes on the things of heaven instead of the things of this earth. And Alana was talking about how she wanted more balls and more toys and more all this stuff. And I said in Pigeon, "You like him not up to the ball." And the crowd was like so excited. I was just asking her if she wants another toy. What's going on? You want all this stuff. You already have all this stuff. The crowd was laughing. They were really in tune with what we were doing. I thought, man, this is going great. We're doing, what a win. We are awesome. It was later that week that a woman from the church came to our house and informed me that instead of using the word for a toy ball, I was actually referring to a part of male anatomy. Big fail. I tried, but I failed majorly, and I knew they weren't laughing at my awesome drama anymore. They were laughing at my choice of words. So, more seriously, here's some pictures of me rocking at mom life with the power off, homeschooling in airports while I have my other kid napping, and MJ, it's hard to see in the picture, but he actually has mud all over him. It's been difficult to figure out how to balance family life and ministry, which I actually think is a big part of everyone's life, especially here in America. You guys have so many things pulling at your families to do. And this was something I had to figure out how to do at Kujip as well. We have a school for our MKs, for our missionary kids there, but it starts at first grade. So I homeschooled Alana in kindergarten, and now I'm homeschooling MJ in kindergarten. And that takes up a decent amount of my time. Then on top of that, everything normal about taking care of your home, cooking, cleaning, doing laundry, all of those things feel like they take twice as long there, either from interruptions with people stopping by or just because the process for doing laundry is much harder and much longer in Papua New Guinea. Also, ants and geckos regularly wage war against our home, and I spend hours trying to place sticky paper just in the perfect location so that the geckos will walk across it and get stuck and I can kill them. I'm not even kidding about how many hours I've spent trying to catch geckos. So I would be focused so much on home life that I would get frustrated. I wasn't spending enough time in ministry. And so I'd start teaching kids church and going to Bible studies with women. But then my home life would start to fall apart. And my kids weren't getting the attention they needed. And I felt like I couldn't do anything right. I couldn't cook right. I couldn't parent. I wasn't relating well with Nationals. I was failing at doing this missionary thing.
So, as Tammy was talking about, our first point today is if you try, you might fail. And Tammy certainly tried, and she failed. I never failed. Of course not. No, I failed a lot. But going back to the Bible story, Peter definitely failed in this story, right? But you got to give him some credit. He was the only one to actually step out of the boat. He was a passionate guy, and he believed in Jesus and wanted to follow him. And he was the only one out of the 12 disciples that actually stepped out of the boat. But ultimately, he failed. So when you first look up Kujip, it's kind of a daunting thing. I've been training to go to be a medical missionary for 16 years since I was 14, and you read about Kujip and you just think, whoa, how am I going to do this? It's been there for over 50 years and it's just doing amazing things for the Lord for such a long time. Here's a map of Papua New Guinea, and in this map, all of the areas in white are where there is at least one doctor, and all the areas in red are where there are zero doctors. So there's about one doctor for every 20,000 people in Papua New Guinea, one of the lowest rates in the whole world. So obviously you're called to do a lot more than I would do in an American emergency department. Not only do I work in the ER, but I do inpatient and outpatient and learn obstetrics and delivering babies. This was a picture of my getting to deliver a set of triplets by C-section, which was a lot of fun. But there was so many times where I tried and it ended up failing. I remember one instance in particular where I was in my office and I had an old papa, an old guy from the bush with me, and I was trying to teach him how to use an inhaler. Most people, you know, they live in a bush house and they have fires in their house because it's actually cold at our elevation at night, and a lot of them develop emphysema or COPD. Really the best treatment is an inhaler, which I'm trying to get him to use, and he just wouldn't get it. So I have an inhaler in my room to show them how to use it. And I was kind of telling them how to spray it and everything like that. But he'd never taken an inhaler. He took medicine by mouth, but never used an inhaler. And I just was getting a little frustrated. And I just put the inhaler in my mouth and just blew the medicine and sucked it really hard so he could get how to take this medicine. But after I took it, I just felt like this tickling in my chest. And I was like, what is that feeling? And just like feel like I needed to cough something up. It's like, what did I just take? I couldn't get it out. And I just and then all of a sudden this little roach came out of my trachea down to the floor and started running away because the inhaler was just sitting in my office. So I don't necessarily think I was successful in getting this papa to take this medicine. I don't think he would like to take a medicine that gives you roaches in your lungs. Another time when I feel like didn't go as well as I would hoped was with a young man named Billy. Billy was about 26 years old when he came to Kujip with his wife and young daughter of about 3 or 4. He came overnight and was admitted by the nurses with just complaints of fever, weakness, and swelling. When I first saw him the next morning on inpatient rounds, I honestly didn't know why the nurses admitted him because he looked pretty good. Looked like a pretty young, healthy guy, maybe a little bit swollen. But then I looked at his labs, and I knew this guy was way sicker than he ever imagined how sick he was. He was in multi-system organ failure. His kidneys and his liver were both shutting down at the same time from a severe form of malaria called Blackwater fever. When I looked at his labs, I knew that Billy's prognosis was basically 100%. He is going to die. Without any dialysis anywhere in the whole country of Papua New Guinea, multisystem organ failure is basically untreatable. And I had just been going through a tough time with some pediatric deaths, and I honestly didn't think I could try again. I had tried and I failed, and I didn't want to try again. But then I thought, why am I here? Why am I at Kujip? And I went for it. Me and the nurses, we tried to get all the donated medicine that would help him. We mixed our own medicine. And after a few days, he was actually starting to get better. His kidney function was improving. His swelling was going down. And he was making a good amount of urine, a sign that his kidneys are improving. And it was amazing. But then Billy got worse. And he got worse quickly. His body started to swell up again. He stopped making urine. And a few days later, he died. What a failure. But at the same time, God is still at work despite our failures. Which leads us to our next point. If you try, you might fail. And if you don't try, you'll miss out. The thing about Kujip is that we don't only provide medical care. We also provide spiritual care. Billy, when he came to Kujip, his life, his body was a mess, as I've told you. But not only his physical body, but his spiritual body was also a mess. He grew up in the church, thanks mainly to his Aunt Esther, Mondamil Church of the Nazarene, way deep in the bush of Papua New Guinea. But when he became a teenager, he left the church, started doing drugs, and was very much addicted to drugs when he came to Kujip. He did end up getting married and having a child, but his life was still a mess. While he was at Kujip, we not only had the chance to give him medicine, but we also had the chance to pray with him. I personally prayed with Billy every day. Our chaplains prayed with Billy every day. Our nurses prayed with him, and his Aunt Esther, who now works as a cleaner in the hospital, prayed with Billy every day. And slowly, 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 Billy had a change of heart. On one of his last cognizant moments, I went to his bed, and I've seen enough patients die that I knew Billy was about to die. And I asked Billy if he wanted to have Christ into his life again. He said yes. He was finally ready to make that decision. I prayed with him. The chaplains came and prayed with him, and his Aunt Esther came and prayed with him. And 2 hours later, Billy passed away. I sure wish the outcome was different. I wish Billy's wife had a husband and Billy's daughter had a father. And I wish he wasn't dead. But in reality, Billy is alive with Christ right now. And I think God was using us to give Billy a chance to make that decision. And Billy's wife and daughter right now is being cared for by Aunt Esther, who's an amazing Christian woman.
So if you don't try, you'll miss out on being a part of what God's doing. So I have an elementary education degree, and part of how I use that at QJIP is by teaching Piccanini Lotu. So Piccanini means kid, Lotu means church, so we teach kids church. In March of 2018, you can put the picture up of the chapel. In March of 2018, Matt and I started teaching kids church once a month. We had about 3 months of Pigeon under our belts, and we started with 80 to 90 kids, ranging in ages from 2 to 14 years. It was a lot of fun and pretty crazy. But this is a picture of our chapel when we were just starting, so it's not packed yet. But as I walked up the road from our house is at one end of the road and the chapel's at the other end of the road. As I walked up the hill to the chapel, I thought, this is my time to shine. This is what I was made for. I'm an educator. I've taught kids church in countless places. This is my moment. I'm finally going to get out of the kitchen and stop cutting up gross meat. And I'm going to make a difference for Jesus in this kids church. Boy, was I wrong that first Sunday, because it did not go as greatly as I thought it would. I lacked classroom management. I didn't keep the kids' interest. Our own kids were sitting in the front row fighting over crayons because they had to share with 15 other kids around them. I read off my script the entire time, probably because I was afraid of talking about anatomy. And on the walk home, I was holding back the tears because I felt like once again I was a failure. Once again, I had tried something that I was supposed to be good at, and failed, and it was awful. It was so terrible. Well, the next month, we did it again because we had made a commitment, but as I was walking up that hill to the chapel, I was thinking, this is going to be terrible again. Why am I even going here? It's not going to go well. I was anxious. I was feeling defeated. And it went much the same. I wish I could say that all 90 kids sat like little angels and got Jesus in their hearts and were saved and went out to become missionaries for the Church of the Nazarene from Papua New Guinea, but that is not true. It went much the same. It was chaotic, and I left feeling like a failure once again. But we stuck with our commitment. Eventually, my pigeon got better, so I didn't have to read off my script so much. And things improved, as you can see from this picture. Oh, the kids' faces, they're all happy, they're smiling, they're loving it, they're really engaged, they're attentively listening to me, except they're not. They're actually watching these puppets. So, we figured out that kids listen to puppets far better than they'll ever listen to human beings. So, we started using puppets that I found in the MK school, and the kids just loved it, absolutely loved it. I think half of them actually think that they're real, so that's a little scary when we come out from behind there, but the kids started learning the English songs I was teaching them. I got more confident in my classroom management, and things started getting better. The truth is, it's still chaos. This is a picture of half of our chapel doing a craft. So you send those boxes of crafts, and this is a picture of that. They all scoot down on their little benches and squeeze in and do their crafts. And it's just chaotic the whole time, and I always leave exhausted. But our numbers have grown. We're up to more than 120 kids now, and I'm regularly running out of supplies. And we have stories that parents tell us of their kids hanging their Bible verses in their houses. And Matt and I have been able to develop deeper relationships with the families as a whole. The kids, you hear them around station singing Every Move I Make. And now when we go up to the road to the chapel in our car, because we have so many profs, the kids are waiting halfway up the road. They run behind the car, so excited for chapel, and they help us bring everything in and set it up. What my humbled self saw as a failure, God turned into a success. And if I had given up, I wouldn't have the opportunity to see how God's working in these kids' lives now. It's still chaotic. It's still messy. It's far from ideal. But God is at work. He doesn't need the perfect PowerPoint or lesson plan. He doesn't even need the power to stay on, because that has happened. He doesn't need perfect to make an impact in a child's life.
So we already talked about how Peter failed, right? But the thing is, he didn't give up after that. He kept on trying, and ultimately, he kept on failing again and again and again. But he kept trying. So, some things that Peter failed at, I think we're never going back. Yes. So some things Peter failed at, right? He got out of the boat and he sank. Jesus was talking about how he needed to go to the cross. He didn't understand it at all. And he was telling him, you can't do that. You can't go to the cross. And Jesus had to say, stop that. Get behind me. And then the soldiers were coming to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he cut off one of the soldiers' ears. He was just trying. He's trying to help, but he kept on failing. And then he denied Christ 3 times. So he was a failure again and again and again. But ultimately, he kept trying, even after this. And he kept trying, and he ultimately led one of the first revivals at Pentecost. He converted some of the first Gentiles. He was one of the first missionaries and was the rock on which Christ would build his church. And that leads us to our last point. Ultimately, it's not about you anyways.
It's not about me. Isn't that a tough lesson? Life isn't about us. If you listened when Matt read the Bible story, I always say Bible story, which sounds so like I'm the children's pastor. That's why I'm saying that. But the scripture verse. When Matt read the scriptures, it's titled Jesus Walks on Water. I all this time had thought that it was titled Peter Walks on Water. But it's titled Jesus Walks on Water. Peter is just a part of the story. He's not the focus. Jesus is still the focus. And I'm just a part of the story. I am not the focus. God is the focus. It's not about me. When you first move to another country, especially one that's in a developing nation, you have to relearn everything. So you have to relearn how to get groceries. You have to relearn how to take care of your groceries because they have to be bleached and processed or else you're going to get sick. You have to figure out how to get clean drinking water again. So as I was in the process of relearning all of these things, I started assessing, was I winning or failing at each of these areas? And so I started using my fellow missionary moms as a measuring stick. We live on a station with about 15 other missionary families. And so I thought, well, they seem like they're winning all the time, so I should aspire to be like them. But I started comparing myself to them in all of these areas, and every single time I felt like I was coming out of failure. Every single time. So, okay, is my bread that I had to make from scratch a win or fail? Well, my neighbor's bread looks like this. My bread was like this blob of grossness that oozed over the cookie sheet into the oven.
It still tasted good.
It did taste good. Better than that pig meat, huh? Anyway, what a failure. I failed at the bread. Okay, well, parenting, win or fail. Our kids were complaining because all the other missionary kids get to go outside and play after school and they're so happy. Okay, Matt and I said, we'll take you tubing in the canal. Okay, we'll be great parents. It'll be such a win. Or was it? We actually got the wrong size life vest, and she went down the canal unable to see the entire time. She actually had fun still, so I'll count it as a win. But at the time, I felt like a failure again. I started comparing myself in every aspect of my life to others. My parenting styles, my ministry involvement, the behavior of my kids versus other kids in the area. I don't think these things are uncommon, even in America, to compare yourself to things, other people. But like Peter, when he started noticing all of the waves around him and lost his focus on Jesus, he started sinking. And I stopped looking to God for my validation and started looking to everyone else around me. And I started sinking. And I was sinking in a sea of comparison. And to be honest with you, I was sinking for almost an entire year in Papua New Guinea. Sinking because I was so focused on how I was doing at being a missionary compared to everybody else. It wasn't until I realized how selfish I was being in comparing myself to everyone else, that I reached up and said, just like Peter, help me. Please save me from this sea of comparison. I was making my life about me. Every time that I was trying to figure out if I was winning or failing, who was I thinking about? Was I thinking about God? Nope. I was thinking about me. How am I doing? Where's my status? I wasn't thinking about God. And the reality is that I was so focused on what I wasn't that I wasn't able to be used by God. Galatians 1:10 says, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God, or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. Sure, I stepped out of the boat and went to Papua New Guinea and tried to be a missionary, but I lost my focus. I stopped looking at God and I started looking around me to everything else and started looking at myself as well. I had to ask for God's forgiveness for being so selfish. And I had to start being intentional about creating some distance from other missionaries so that we could focus on our family and make decisions for our family. I started prioritizing life, and wouldn't you know, God started opening doors for me to get involved in other ministries. Because finally, I was not in my head worrying about how I was doing so much that I was able to give to others.
So instead of making it about us, we're trying to learn to give both the good, the successes, and the bad, the failures, to God. In my, literally, my last 3 days of Kujip, I have two stories of young men that really stand out in my mind. And just to note, too, it would be impossible to share all the stories that we have in just a sermon. So please stop back in the back and see us and get a prayer card and sign up for our newsletter and check out our blog. Sorry, we forgot to mention that. But these two young men really stand out in my mind. The first was a young man named Josik. Josik was about 25 years old when he came to Kujip. He had some chest pain after playing rugby, the national sport of Papua New Guinea. Actually, a very promising young man, would likely go on to play rugby in Australia if this didn't happen to him. He came to Kujip, and one of my colleagues quickly diagnosed Josik with having a heart attack. Very uncommon for a young, healthy 25-year-old Papua New Guinean to have a heart attack. But there he was, in the middle of the highlands of Papua New Guinea, with a massive heart attack. So we had to deal with the fact that not only does he not have a way to get to the only place that will do a cardiac catheterization, which is what he needs a stent in one of his arteries to open it up to get blood supply back to his heart. But he doesn't have the funds to pay the fees, the enormous fees that that hospital has. So it's not like America where you just go into the ER. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have insurance or what your status is. We'll treat you the same. In fact, my residency, we like to, for a heart attack, we like to get from the door to in the to getting a stent in less than 30 minutes. And that's not going to happen if you come to Kujip with a heart attack, unfortunately. We can do a lot of things, but doing this procedure is not one of them. So the capital is the only place with this hospital. And it costs $15,000, U.S. dollars, which most people make around $8 to $10 a day. They will not even see Josik. They won't even look at him before they have that money in their bank account. So somehow, through an amazing partnership with Mission Aviation Fellowship, which is an amazing Christian organization that we work with a lot, we had a way to get to the capital, but we didn't have the funds. Somehow, through a miracle, there was hundreds of family and people from the hospital that gave money so Josik could go and get this procedure. The problem was that every minute, more and more of his heart muscle was dying as it was blocked. Ultimately, we had to stay with him overnight, because it's unsafe to fly at night, and maintain him on a self-mixed medication drip. This is us bringing Josik onto the to the plane. And this is us getting him onto the plane. His medication drip was actually kinked for just a few minutes, and he almost went into cardiac arrest, which happened quite a few times, actually, whenever the medicine ran out. Ultimately, we were able to get to the hospital. He got a stent, and he is doing great. He's alive and well. May not play rugby for a while, but he's alive and doing well. What a win. The second young man literally came the next day while I was on call, a little tired from a trip to the capital. I was called about midnight for a young man that came in because he was shot in the chest. He was shot just below his right collarbone. His name was Chris. Chris was also a very promising young man. His whole family had actually pooled their money so that Chris could go to university. Getting to go to higher education is very rare. It's very expensive. So they all put their money behind Chris, and he went to college, and he had just graduated college when, through no fault of his own, while home, he was shot in the chest during a tribal dispute. I was called about midnight, and when I initially got to the ER, he was barely conscious, and I did a quick ultrasound and noticed that his right lung was collapsed, and he was hemorrhaging into his chest. He probably had a large blood vessel right under his collarbone. I quickly put a large tube into his chest, which drained all the air, and about 1.5 liters of blood just squirted out. And initially, Chris stabilized. He woke up, but soon after that, he was starting to lose consciousness again. I called our surgeon and our blood bank, and we started to resuscitate Chris. Our surgeon got there, but soon after he got there, he went into cardiac arrest. I placed a large catheter into one of his big blood vessels and gave him 2 units of blood right away while the surgeon cut open his chest to get access to his heart. We switched places and I pumped on Chris's heart while he opened up right under the collarbone to try to stop the bleeding. We tried everything we could, but ultimately Chris passed away. Right when I got home, I saw both of these stories in the actual national newspaper. The story of Josic, what a win, this guy's doing great. Look at that. I'm feeling really good about myself. And then the story of Chris and how he was such a promising young man, so much ahead of him, and he passed away. And then this national secular newspaper talked about how the family of Chris was trusting God with this. Typically, when this happens, that tribe will go fight and hack up the other tribe or seek compensation in the form of money and pigs. But they were trusting God with all of this instead of doing that. It's so easy for me to put these two stories on myself, to think, that was amazing with Josic, how we saved his life, we did all these things, and he's doing great. Or to put the failure of Chris on me. I could have done something different. He wouldn't be dead if he was cared for by another doctor. All these thoughts just rush into my mind. But in reality, it's really not about us at all. We're going to try our best to do the best we can with what we have. But in the end, we need to trust God with the result.
So in summary, if you try, you might fail, but if you don't try, you'll miss out on the cool stuff that God could do through you and in you. So when was the last time you failed? Has God been telling you to do something, but you're allowing the fear of failure to keep you from trying? Maybe it's telling a coworker about your faith or starting a new job or ministry that God's asking you to do. Maybe it's going on a missions trip. Or maybe you did step out of the boat, but you failed. Like Peter, you sank. Was God telling you, get up, try again. It's okay. Or is he telling you to try something different? Or maybe you got out of the boat and you lost your focus and you started sinking and you need to take Jesus' hand and let it pull you back out and help you refocus your attention on him. Remember that if you are winning, it is because of God and give him the glory for it. And if you're failing, remember that he is still at work, and he will not be limited by our failures.
In 2 Corinthians 12:9 through 10, it says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me.'" So, we are failures, and we are weak. And we are trying to inspire you all to be weak and failures too. We do believe that God has a unique plan for each and every one of us and each and every one of you. We want to inspire you to step up and out and do whatever God's calling you to do, and not to let a fear of failure keep you from being used by God to make an eternal difference. Thank you. Yes.
And a little bit about its background, just a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Kujip Hospital started, this region of the world is one of the newest kind of known areas of the world. So the whole Highlands region, which is a huge area, wasn't even known to the outside world until the mid-1930s. So it's one of the most rural places in the world. Kujip Hospital started about 50 years ago, and it was given land between two warring tribes. And over the last 50 years, those tribes have been in an amazing amount of peace, which can only be described by the gospel. Around Kujip, so many churches have sprung up. If you look at where the Church of the Nazarenes are in Papua New Guinea, it's just, that's the epicenter. Because many times, those who would never come into the church will come into the hospital to receive medical care. And I really believe in medical missions, obviously, and I'm excited about it. So at CUJIP, initially it was started just by all expats, all American or other missionaries. But pretty much now, it's run by Papua New Guineans because we've trained so many Papua New Guineans. And mainly just the doctors are missionaries, and that probably isn't going to change soon. We have about 150 beds, and we do see a lot of people. We have about 500,000 people that our hospital cares for, with a much smaller team than you'd have here, and do a lot of deliveries and surgeries and do our best with what we have.
Thank you. Yep. Let me ask you about, I know this transition from being supported by Samaritan's Purse is a big transition, and even hearing the two categories now, which is a new thing in the Church of the Nazarene.
Sure.
I've read your newsletter, no, but just tell us a little bit about what you need and how that works with the funding and how what you're raising and for how long you'll be back in Papua New Guinea and that kind of thing.
Yep. So our terms are usually two-year terms. So we're going to go back the end of April, Lord willing, with all the shots and paperwork and funds that needs to happen. With going through Samaritan's Purse first, it was nice because we have a good base of people, mainly who give to us monthly. And a lot of those people have signed up again because they believe in this work. We obviously believe in it too. I never thought I would need to raise this much as a missionary, but we need to raise about $5,000 a month. And that goes to flights and just living and homeschool and lots of things. And then we also try to keep about 20% just for benevolence because there's so many needs that come to us on a daily basis, whether it's medical supplies or going to a bush clinic or just helping out people. So the best way, if possible, is to give to us monthly. There's ways on the prayer card. It's online through the Nazarene Church, and your church gets 10% missions giving credit for that. And there's ways to just take it out of your bank account or credit card.
When will you be going back? I don't remember the month.
Yeah, end of April.
End of April, well, so you got a couple more months.
Couple more months,
you're
yep.
Here. Yep, okay. Hey, we're going to receive an offering here this morning, and I hope if God gives you the opportunity to give that we can help. $120,000 for 2 years of support with a lot of things that takes care of. And you told me, what, about 60% there or
yep.
something like that?
Yep,
I don't know,
we're about
I'm
60%.
Guessing. Yep.
Haven't
yep.
calculated everything with the yep. district tour yet, so
yep.
maybe even more.
Maybe you can help with the offering today, and God's given you the ability, and you want to do that. And there may be some people that say, Matt and Tammy, we can help you monthly. And that's what the card's for, to help to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. It's a different day with missionaries raising support than it was even 5 years ago. And if the Lord gives us as this church the opportunity to help this couple as they serve, just want to invite you to do that. I'm going to ask our ushers if you would come, and we're going to receive an offering. We'll let you go down now if you want to. Thank you, Matt and Tammy.